Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have a lot to catch up on. We have the Cubs winning streak. We have the White Sox fire sale. We have Bears training camp. We've got all kinds of Blackhawk stuff to talk. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Sure, the season's not going on right now, but it'll be starting up before you know it. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, there is a ton to talk about, and I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, obviously we were out last week, and last week there was a lot of news, and it was popping up just constant left and right. And just outside of Chicago, like, sports news the past 2 weeks has been all sorts of bonkers, crazy everywhere. And obviously some stuff you kind of expect and a lot of it you don't. And that's what we got here in the city of Chicago. And this is also that chaotic time of year because the MLB trade deadline is just a few days away from when we're talking right now on Sunday night. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You've got, pennant races starting to heat up. You've got the trade deadline. You've got NFL training camp opening. So you're starting to really heat up. And then, you know, we had a big story occur just the other day. So I guess let's just start with the biggest story is, Rockwell Wirtz passed away, 70 years old.
Completely shocking, completely unexpected. And I mean, they even said, the family said too, it was sudden, very sudden, because when I saw the news, I'm like, was he sick or something? And either we didn't know or we kind of knew and I missed it. But I didn't think so, because you saw him at those draft lottery party, the big one that they had. You know, they had all sorts of draft lottery parties, whatever. And you saw him when they got the number one overall pick. And it seemed like everything was fine. And I'm thinking, you know, first of all, he's not that old. Only what, 70 years old, right?
70.
Right, 70 years old. And I didn't have any idea he was sick. And then you hear that it was a sudden illness. And it caught everybody by surprise. And I'm not just talking about the fans, but you heard from all the players, the ex-players, other people that have worked for the Blackhawks over the years. Chris Chelios went on the radio and talked about it. Eddie Olczyk went on the radio, talked about it. Plenty of other people talked about it. And this is crazy.
I want to talk about when Chelly was on the radio with Mully and Haw. You know, I'm going to say my piece, and it lines up pretty close to, I don't know if you read what Mark Lazarus had to say.
I did.
So the man changed the trajectory of the Chicago Blackhawks for the better.
Dramatically.
He brought them into this century. He put them back on television. He revamped everything. And it was on his, partly on his back that they won 3 Stanley Cups.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, he has to have a black eye for the whole Kyle Beach issue. And not just that it happened under his eye, but the response afterwards and his outburst to questions about the issue. And he, for the most part, since that presser where he, you know, he went kind of nuts, we haven't seen much of him.
No, we haven't seen or heard from him. And, you know, I was there when they retired Hossa. Not retired his number. I wasn't there for that. But when they announced that they were going to retire him and they signed him to that one-day contract, I was there and he was there. He didn't say anything. Danny Wirtz did all the talking. He was just kind of sitting there. And, you know, obviously Danny Wirtz took over as CEO before then. But, you know, especially since then, if you heard anything from the Wirtz family, it was all through Danny Wirtz, who correct. I assume is going to be the next chairman, right? It's got to be him.
Yeah. So complicated issues, but there's a time and there's a place to say it. And Mark Lazarus wrote it in a column. I'm okay with that. But David Haw basically said it to Chelios and did not go over well. Did not go over well at all.
I didn't hear the whole interview, so I can't fully speak on it, but I just know that they were talking about it. I know that he was talking about it kind of from a personal level. So I don't really know exactly what was said. So I can't, you know, did you hear it? I did.
Yeah. David Haw was like, oh, you know, is now the time to talk about, you know, the Kyle Beach issue, or, you know, what happened with Kyle Beach and the outburst. And Chelios is like, absolutely not. No, not at all. And was very upset. And, you know, it's one thing because history happened. And I don't think because a person dies, you have to forget all of the bad things that happened. But, you know, you also have to remember that there are people that were close to that person, and you don't have to rub it in their face either.
Yeah. And that's where I'm trying to, that's where some of the difficulty comes in. Because listen, I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I was very critical of Rocky when that outburst happened. And when I look back at that whole thing, really it's kind of the same thing with Jonathan Toews, where when I look back at that whole issue, it's more how they responded to when this all came public. Because, you know, if we're trusting the Jenner and Block report, they pretty much absolved Rocky Wirtz of knowing about it. And listen, you and I, nobody truly knows if he had no knowledge of it whatsoever or not. We really don't know. I'm just going based off what they said in the report, but you can look and say, listen, he may have not known or understood what was going on. That to me wasn't as big of an issue, because I think the sins of that whole thing really fall more on John McDonough, Stan Bowman, Coach Quenneville, and the staff that didn't act when they directly knew about it. Where, you know, Rocky Wirtz was above all that. And sure, he was the owner of the team at the time. How much he knew, I don't know. I can't say that he did or didn't, but it was the outburst that was the bad look on Rocky Wirtz's part. And, you know, there was kind of that point where you're like, okay, maybe we shouldn't hear from him as much going forward. And then like you said, we didn't. We really had not heard him speak publicly since that. And, you know, I don't think there's a coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence that was the case. And what I'm trying to do is, you know, not forget, but also, like you said, you don't have to rub it in their face. And, you know, it sounds like Rocky Wirtz was very good to a lot of people. We've heard a lot of things, good things about it, about him, I should say. And, you know, I never knew the person. I bumped into him once at a Blackhawks game. I didn't say anything to him. So I've never met the man personally. So I can't speak from a personal level. And I do understand that there are people with good relationships that's really hard for them to speak ill of somebody. So it's that challenge of not wanting to disrespect the deceased, but, you know, also, you know, acknowledge the feelings that you and I have both expressed on this show for the bad things that did happen. It's tough.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, whether or not he knew anything about it, I have opinions, but what do they say? Opinions are like buttholes. Everyone has them and they usually stink. I'm just going to go, hey, the investigators absolved him. I'll take it at that face value. But what I do know for a fact is that in that press conference, he had the wrong attitude. His outburst was wrong. And, you know, you do have to be balanced because he was good to a lot of people. And I know somebody who he invested in that person's business and was good. A lot of people, you know, I've never heard anybody be critical. The old man. Yeah. I hear he was a son of a bitch.
Oh, he was everybody hated him. Everybody hated him. You're not going to see us get sentimental about dollar bill words.
But Rocky, you don't hear a lot of bad things, or, you know.
No, you don't.
Nobody's perfect.
No.
But, you know, you have to walk that balance of, hey, there's a lot of people that, you know, are having a difficult time with his death. But you also have the people, you know, Kyle Beach and the people that are close to him that, you know, if you gloss over all this, you know, you rub their face in it too. So you've got to speak the truth. You just got to do it in a balanced, you know, in a careful way.
Right.
You know, so it's a big loss for the Blackhawks organization and the players. And, you know, it sucks that he'll never get to see Connor Bedard suit up for the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
And it just makes you wonder. I honestly have no idea, because the Wirtz Corporation, they have their hands in a lot of different things, banks and real estate, and
they just bought the Steel. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah, I did. I was going to talk about that. They bought the Chicago Steel from the USHL, which, you know, that was kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal. And, you know, we've talked about the McCaskies and Virginia and Ding Dong George, and you really compare the Wirtz and them. As we've said many times on this show, the McCaskies, they just have the Bears. That is their sole business. The Wirtz, on the other hand, I mean, like you said, I mean, they have their hands in all sorts of different areas. I mean, they are like the busy businessness of business people, if that even makes sense. Look at the alcohol corporate that they own, that whole thing, you know, that's a big thing for them.
Yeah. So I don't know where, you know, how things shake out now that Rocky is gone. They're not a publicly traded company, so it's not public, you know, all of their business interests, who runs what, or, you know, if it's one umbrella that kind of runs everything, or if they're operate, you know, financially under one umbrella, but each unit operates independent. I have no idea. I have no idea the structure. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because some of the businesses are much more profitable than the others. I mean, we remember a couple of years ago where essentially the Blackhawks had to shuffle money from the alcohol distributor to the Blackhawks for, you know, to pay off some debt.
And I mean, wasn't that debt kind of accumulated over the Bill Wirtz era and all that crap?
I'm not sure. you know, I don't think it was a, oh, hey, the Blackhawks are losing money. I think it was a, an investment type thing into the organization. But, you know, I don't know how this all plays out. And, you know, who knows? Maybe there's a, that show Succession, a Succession type thing going on, you know, because doesn't Rocky have a brother that they're not on the best of terms?
Yeah, that's my understanding. I mean, the way I look at it is, it, from what I'm reading, it seems like this is just Danny. It's his now. This is his.
The whole Wirtz Corporation or the Blackhawks?
I mean, I think that, well, let's see. He's got 4 children, Danny being one of them. I don't know about some of the other entities, but when it comes to the Blackhawks, it's Danny Wirtz's. That's what it seems like. I mean, he was the CEO when Rocky died. So he's already been kind of groomed into this position of being the head honcho there. So I don't know about the other business entities. Now, when you're talking out loud, when you say you wonder what's going to happen, I don't know if you're trying to say this or not, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but are you in any way speculating like selling of the franchise?
No, no, no. I mean, I think it's staying, you know, in Wirtz ownership. I don't know if it spins off of the Wirtz Corporation into Danny Wirtz owns the Blackhawks. I don't know how the structure works out, or if it means when it stays in that portfolio, and I have no idea. I just don't know how that all plays out. I don't see it in any way, shape, or form getting sold at any point in the near future. But I just don't know how the business structure changes and if that will have any impact on how the team is run.
So this is a headline from the Daily Herald, and this is the Daily Herald, so take as you will. Seems likely Danny Wirtz will become the next principal owner of the Blackhawks. A look at how he's put his stamp on it, the team, the past 2-5 years. He's become the CEO and has implemented several cultural changes. So, I mean, that kind of sums up right there, you know, what's going to happen on that end. I mean, they have pretty much their structure in place going forward. It's like, you know, Jamie Faulkner being president operations and Danny now being the principal owner. I'm sure there's a lot of scrambling though. I mean, because of all these business entities and not expecting the sudden passing of Rocky. So it is definitely interesting.
Absolutely. And I was reading about the Chicago Steel sale. The Blackhawks did not buy them because it is against the rules for an NHL team to buy a junior hockey team. But the Wirtz Corporation bought the Chicago Steel. It seems like a twisting of the rules, but it's allowed.
Yeah, I mean, if it's legal.
Yeah, it's a, you know, the team can't own them, but the business, the umbrella business owns both of them.
Yeah, so they own... The Blackhawks own the Ice Hogs, and the Wirtz Corporation owns the Steel.
Yes. yeah, weird stuff, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, this is truly a new era for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I wonder how this will shake out. I mean, you know, it's a possibility that other than, you know, I'm sure there'll be quite a few tributes. I'm going to take a wild guess that the Blackhawks wear some sort of patch on their uniform.
Yes, I would imagine so.
Outside of that, I don't know if fans will even see a difference. Maybe we do, maybe we don't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was like, you know, you're not, Danny Wirtz is not taking over for Bill Wirtz, where the team wasn't on TV, irrelevant, bad, attendance was bad, the team is bad. I mean, the team's not good, but you're bad for a reason, and you're building around a young superstar. I mean, obviously, you had Kane and Taze just being drafted when Bill Wirtz died, but nobody gave a shit back then because of how much Bill Wirtz chased away in the city. Now you actually, you know, you might not be the Bears, but you're pretty relevant in this town comparably to where you were in 2007. So you're on well, though, there is something interesting to keep in mind here, though. Isn't their contract with NBC coming up?
Yes. And I want to talk about that a little later.
Okay.
I have a thought too, and I'm going to spin a yarn, but I'll wait till we're talking another topic.
Oh man, you're getting me excited for this, because I think we have the same thought.
I'm going to throw another thing out there, and this is wildly hypothetical. Is the Cleveland baseball team changed their name? The Washington football team changed their name. And I think the battle cries for changing team names has sort of died down.
I think so too.
But with Rocky gone, if Rocky was alive, I think he would fight till his death to never change the name. But if this battle cry came, and listen, I was one that was super pro changing the Washington football team and the Cleveland baseball team names. I was right there.
Yeah, Washington especially, that you needed to change, definitely.
And the Cleveland baseball team, more so because of the logo than the name.
Mm-hmm, right.
Like, I was pro both, but it was hard to defend the name when you had the logo mascot.
Right, right, right.
The combination just really, really took away any defense you had. But, you know, when people like the Golden State Warriors, Chicago Blackhawks, I kind of drew the line because those don't seem disrespectful. And
the circumstances and what those names mean.
But now that Rocky is gone, if that charge were to happen, I think it's a lot more likely that it would happen now that he's gone. This is wild speculation, just saying that I think the old guard being gone would allow winds of change to come in if it got a little drafty.
Basically, what you're saying is the odds have changed, but the odds are still not great.
Right. I'm saying is if the cry for name changes did come up again, obviously Chicago is in that next crop, arguably leading the next crop. But if it crept up again, I think the resistance would be a lot less based on progression of time, the old guard being gone, and not wanting the controversy.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I think you summed it up is something that's very low probability, but the probability grew with Rocky's passing.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
still
no,
low,
I get what you're
still very
yes,
low.
Right. I agree.
I guess if that cry ever came up again, Rocky would be leading the charge with the no way, Jose. I don't think anybody would be, fighting it nearly as hard.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And I'm going to go in another tangent too about the team itself and kind of relating what happened back to 2010. I do feel like, and you know, we don't know what it's like internally there, culture-wise or whatever, but I do really think that Danny Wirtz was trying to be the face of culture change from within after what happened with Kyle Beach. And I do feel like that if Danny Wirtz is now the principal owner, there might be a bit, you know, I think people were pretty lax with Danny Wirtz and kind of this realization that we need change and, you know, the personnel change within it. But I do feel like that with him being there, there might be more of a laxed feeling like, hey, you know, we feel like our culture is really changing. And I don't want to necessarily blame everything on Rocky Wirtz, obviously, but knowing what we know now, you know, there just might be something said about that. And again, I don't work there. I don't know what things are like behind the scenes now, but I'm pretty confident based on what we've heard publicly that there is a significant culture change. And this goes beyond just the Blackhawks. This is way more than just the Blackhawks. Look what's happening at Northwestern and look at all the other stuff that all the skeletons that have come coming out of the closet. I think that as time goes on and more of this gets weeded out, there's more of a realization that we need to, you know, be better culturally within these organizations.
I'm not going to dive too deep into this, but I'm really disappointed in Northwestern. It's one thing where this happens under a coaching staff and especially a coach that's been there a long time. You can see how that seeps in and then just seems okay because everybody else is doing it. And people are afraid to speak up. And when they do, it gets laughed off because they're the oddballs. So I see how they can't see it within the football program, but the president of the university just trying to sweep it under the rug. And if it wasn't for the absolutely amazing journalism of, you know, it's the president of that school fucked around and found out by having one of the best journalism programs in under his nose. And they showed him why and uncovered all of this. And they forced the school's hand, and the school went from a hey, while there's they were going to have him the coach suspended for 2 weeks and back before the Big Ten media day. It was going to be all under the rug until they uncovered things, and they went uh-oh, we can't suspend, we've got to fire Fitz. And they did. And they have an interim coach. And I don't know if you heard the Big Ten presser, but they made the interim coach go up there. And he had nothing to say about the coaching staff that's still in place that has accusations of them directly being involved in things. And they talked about Pat Fitzgerald like he was, you know, an honored man that just decided to retire. But he was still part of the family. Like it was crazy. And there's a lawsuit. I heard a commercial on the radio where they're recruiting people that might have been in, you know, gone through this and haven't come forward yet. Like, okay.
Yeah, that situation's a mess. It's bad.
It's bad. And, you know, and if they get a few donors to that school go, yeah, this is bad, and step away, I mean, you'll probably see the athletic director go, and you'll probably see the president go.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's really ugly there. It's a real shame.
And to hear so many people defend the football program at some point, like, you got to draw the line and be like, you know, it's one thing to work somebody hard It's another thing what you put them through. This cycle of abuse just has to end.
Yeah. It, you know, and it's like I've said before, what we know with some of the stuff that happened behind closed doors with all these organizations, it's the tip of the iceberg. And there's a lot of things that have happened. And, you know, it's, you know, now you hope that teams take more and more initiatives to prevent those types of things from happening. And, you know, going back to the Blackhawks, I do feel confident that, you know, Danny Wirtz and, you know, Luke Richardson, the head coach, and Kyle Davidson, the general manager, Jamie Faulkner, the president, all those people, you know, that they know that they have to create a culture for the better. And I do feel like that is happening. And sure, I'm not there. I don't know 100% what's going on there, like I said, but I do feel like that they are advocating and working the best they can for change. And I feel like, you know, Danny Wirtz being in charge and making that very clear that that's what they're trying to aim for. And, you know, Kyle Davidson's spoken about it publicly too, what they're trying to do. You know, it makes you feel better about what's going on over there, because, you know, if you would have told me a few years ago that this stuff was happening behind the scenes and in 2010 with the Hawks and Northwestern, I would have just been floored. I wouldn't have even guessed.
You know, and I know I'll probably catch flack for this, but I think having a woman being so highly, you know, promoted within the team is a good start.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that going forward, the organization is changing with the times for the better. And that's something we all knew that Bill Wirtz never did. I mean, it is amazing how much of that franchise just evolved from Bill Taraki. I mean, wasn't it 2004 they were called the worst franchise in all of sports?
Yeah.
Like, yep. ESPN said that the Chicago Blackhawks were the bottom worst franchise
of all the four major sports.
Yep. All of it.
Yep. Out of like, what, 120 teams ish?
Yeah. Like, that's, I mean, like you said, you know, we can talk about other owners and, you know, you could say good and bad things about all the owners here, you know, currently, but you can never say anything good about Bill Wirtz.
Right. I kind of want to spin this, keep this conversation going and move it to the baseball. The White Sox are so out of it. I mean, they're not mathematically eliminated, but they may as well be. When I looked last night, I didn't check today. The White Sox were 11 games out of first place, 16 and a half games out of the wild card, and they would have to jump seven teams to win the wild card. So they are essentially out of it. Every time we're like, well, you know, now's the time where they can make a move, and no, it's done. They've already raised the white flag and are selling off pieces. And I know there's a big cry for Jerry Reinsdorf to sell the Chicago White Sox, and that would start to turn things around, because honestly, it's how can anybody say that the frustrations of this team over who's in their third rebuild in a decade, third? How can you say that it doesn't start at the top with Jerry? And I told my friend Gary, I was like, why doesn't he just sell the team? He's 87 years old. He's seen Rocky pass away, who I'm sure that all these owners of the Chicago sports teams know each other.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they do. They definitely do.
A little cabal. But I'm sure that the passing of Rocky didn't go unnoticed. And honestly, he might go, not to be Morgan, he's what, 87, 88? He might go before Virginia.
Virginia's going to outlive all of us.
I mean, he's well beyond the typical life expectancy of a man in America. Well beyond it. So you ask yourself, why does he keep doing this? And my friend Gary basically pointed out that the contracts for the Bulls and the White Sox are coming up, and you're seeing the dying off of regional sports networks.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a big opportunity for Jerry to consolidate and basically create a Chicago sports network. And what you said earlier is, with the Blackhawks contract being up, is you could parlay all of that, and you would have the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the White Sox, all on one network. Makes it really hard to say no to if you're you know, trying to sell that as a streaming package.
I had a similar idea, and it might not, your idea might be one of the more likely ones, but you know what I was kind of thinking? Do you have, like, it's similar. Think about it. It's similar. Do you have any idea what I could possibly be thinking about right now?
I don't.
Marquee snatches them.
That's a possibility.
Marquee shows the Blackhawks games.
I mean, that's a possibility, is they all go in together. I don't, especially now. I mean, didn't just this week the Cubs announce that you could now get Marquee as a streaming standalone? Mm-hmm. Because they all recognize, they all recognize cable is dying. And how many people do you know that keep cable and it's not because of sports?
Not a whole lot.
I mean, most everybody that I know that has cable does so because of sports. And so if you form this sports network, whether it be they spin off and they rival the Marquee network, or Marquee network sort of absorbs, or they be kind of combined, and it goes hand in hand with, there's a network called the Stadium Network, and the majority stake of that was just acquired by Jerry Reinsdorf.
Didn't he help found that?
It was previously owned by Sinclair, who runs the Marquee network.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But all the Blackhawks, the Bulls, and the White Sox, all those contracts expire in October of next year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to spin this even more, is they could put on the Fire. I don't know if the Fire are on television.
Weren't they on CSN or NBC?
I don't know, but you could put on the Ice Hogs. You could put on the Wolves. You could put on the Sky. You could put on DePaul basketball.
Yeah, I don't know what the Sky's contract is. I mean, they're currently with Marquee. I don't know how long that is, though.
Okay, if you combine them all, you've got this Chicago sports conglomerate. And honestly, if you take it away from being a cable package and you make it where you can stream it as well, I think that you'll see a rise in usage. I think a lot of the regional, so what happens is those regional sports networks that host baseball and basketball and hockey, you know, with the big regions, you know, it's you can maintain, but the smaller the region and the less sports they have, it gets really hard to sustain because they get so expensive that, you know, in your cable bill, you know, $12 of your cable bill probably goes to NBC Sports Chicago and ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
Like so much of that goes towards it. And if, you know, it gets really tough for cable providers to be like, they're stuck in a rock and a hard place. If they raise the price to pay those bills to the regional sports networks, then people start going away from cable because it's too expensive. But if they cut the sports networks out, people then unsubscribe to cable, and it's a vicious cycle, especially when you see if those teams aren't doing well. Like mm-hmm. if you're a city that only has one, maybe two of the major sports, you probably aren't that big of a city to begin with, you know.
Right. Like if you're like Raleigh or something and you only have the Panthers and the Hurricanes, you don't have an MLB baseball team, you know, that's, or like even like New Orleans, you know, yeah, you have a basketball team and a football team, but you have a triple A baseball team. Well,
football team is on regular television.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yes.
Yeah. Just your NBA team is on.
Right.
That.
Right.
Pittsburgh has all of the teams, but it's not a very big city. And the biggest
they don't have basketball.
You're right. Sorry,
which is kind of surprising, isn't it?
Kind of. Yeah. Just because it's you know, it's got every other sport.
It's a rich sports town. I mean, the Steelers are one of the most successful franchises, and so are the Penguins. It really does surprise me.
I know. And you could make a black and gold uniform. People would be hyped on that.
Oh, could you imagine like a Steelers version of the NBA? That'd be kind of cool. Anyway.
But, you know, can the Pirates and the Penguins support a regional sports network if neither team is doing well?
The Pirates. Ugh.
Yeah, that, you know, it gets tough. So I could see where for Chicago this would be, you know, big.
And, oh yeah, three of the five major teams, yeah, at least.
Yeah, and you know, who's to say, like, is if cable starts dying more, does Marquee sort of need to join forces and create one Chicago one with all the teams on, you know, it all the teams on in one network that you
Marquee's not going to get absorbed. Marquee is going to do the absorbing. It is going to turn into a giant Godzilla and just or like a giant like the Blob. It just grows bigger, bitter. Just
hey, here's where Sean walks up to the line, then steps back about 10 paces and gets a running start and leaps over the line. It's the human centipede of Chicago Sports Network.
God damn it. No. Oh. Diverting away from that real quick. Let's say, here's a scenario, okay? Like, it makes sense, right? Like, for those three, because they're all on NBC right now, right?
Yeah.
To be part of one. But, you know, like if there was Marquee, I mean, I don't know if Marquee would do this. I'm just throwing this out there. What if Marquee did get the Blackhawks? And then you had the Bulls and the White Sox, who have the same owner. It's like, then what? Would you have the Jerry Reinsdorf channel?
Let me put it
this way. Might as well call it that.
So, did you... I believe I saw the price of the streaming version of Marquee. It's like $20 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Which is expensive for a streaming platform that really only has one thing. And who's going to stream that all year long or pay for that all year long? You're going to get it for April, May, June, July, August, September, maybe, depending on how your team's doing. So you're getting it half the year.
Hey, 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 hey. They broadcast CubsCon.
Ooh. But I mean, honestly, most people are probably going to subscribe for half of the year.
Well, and that's kind of my point too. Imagine if you had the Blackhawks, that's your winter right there.
Yeah. You got your Bulls and your Blackhawks and you get the revenue for the rest of the year. And it becomes for just the Cubs. You're like, you know, am I paying $20 a month for this? I guess. I mean, I'm not for the rest of the season, but you know, for next season, I guess. But if you're like, oh, well, I also get the White Sox and the Bulls and the Blackhawks, suddenly you're like, okay, I'm starting to see value in this.
Mm-hmm.
It
would be kind of ironic to have the White Sox on Marquee or owned by Marquee. That, you know, not saying that's ever going to happen. I'm just saying that'd be funny.
Yeah, I mean, but if they broadcast together, and you know, you can easily, you know, that way you don't even worry about, like with a cable network, you can't have, without having a, you know, two versions of the network, two channels, you can't broadcast both teams if they're playing at the same time. With the streaming app. With the streaming app, you can.
Yes, that's true.
You know, when the Olympics were going on and I have the Peacock network, is I had on my iPad, I was watching one sport, and on the TV I was watching another sport.
Right,
I was
watching
multiple sports.
Exactly. With the streaming, you absolutely can.
Yeah. And you know what? You could make it so, hey, you could watch it through the app on a split screen. They could easily do that. And you know, which probably the feature is not as desirable for baseball, but for the winter sports, you know how many times that I want to watch the Bulls and the Blackhawks and are on the same time?
Yeah.
You could watch a split screen of it. That's awesome.
Hey, in college, we had multiple TVs in one of our rooms and we would have the Bulls game on one and the Blackhawks game on the other. Imagine having that on one screen with two different streams at the same time.
Right. And my wife has given me the okay to buy an 80-inch TV.
Ooh. So
we're upgrading here in the Hoffman household. So I'm like 80 screen TV and getting to be able to turn up the split screen. That would be awesome.
You're going to get the IMAX speakers. So every time you turn on the TV, the house is just going to vibrate violently.
Have you ever been to that store ABT? ABT?
Yes.
Have you ever gone in their home theater setup?
I sure have.
Oh my God. That's what I want my house to look like. But I saw the price tag. If you were to put it was like $400,000 or $300,000.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous. It was more than my house. And I was like, this is cool, but I don't have that much money.
This may be pocket change for Jeff Bezos, but for the common Joe like us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
ABT is fun to just browse.
Yeah, I'd never been there before and I work right by it, but my daughter's friend's mom works there. And so they were like, oh, hey, we're for the girl's birthday. They were going to get a hotel room and let the kids swim in the hotel pool. I'm like, okay. And they're like, just meet up at ABT and you could drop her off or whatever. So I'm like, I went up and they were like, and the kid's dad was like, oh, you never been here before? Let me give you the tour here. And I was like, holy shit. Just sitting in there watching. It was like being in the movie theater. It wasn't like, I've been to people that have like nice setups with stadium type seats where they've built a small home theater. And it's cool. It's I'm not shitting on it at all, but it's not like being in this theater where it's like being in the movies. It's like a miniature movie theater. It's unreal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. For a second, I thought that they were going to have their birthday party at ABT.
That would be funny. No, they would.
Hey, kids, you can browse around and then we'll open presents over by the flat screens.
No, the kids just went and got candy from the candy store and then went swimming.
Okay, that makes more that makes more sense.
So yeah, I mean, you know, that's what's spinning into the Blackhawks thing is, I'm sure that has been discussed, and I'm sure that's in the cards, and I'm sure this NBC Sports Chicago is like, damn it. But yeah, that's the future. That's why Jerry's not selling, because you know how much money he's going to make, how much more money he's going to make.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I'm reading and hearing all these hypothetical things about Jerry Reinsdorf selling, and I'm just thinking in my mind, when and why would that happen? I wouldn't believe it until I saw it. I get the wishful thinking. Don't get me wrong. I wish he'd sell both teams, but I just, until I believe it with my own eyes, I can't believe it.
Things won't change for the White Sox until Jerry dies. And again, I'm not trying to be morbid, but there's no way he's going to give up on anything while he's alive, unless he just, you know, there's a dementia sets in or some sort of bad medical condition. But for the part and parcel, it's until he dies. And I don't know what his son is like and how he'll do things differently. So that would be the first time that you could be like, okay, maybe we'll see a change, because I feel for the White Sox fans. They're, you know, they don't have a good hand.
No, and you know what's funny is they were trying to start a sell the team chant during the Cubs White Sox game, the same way that they did it at the Oakland Giants game with the Oakland A's, and I think that was in Oakland actually, or not in Oakland, in San Francisco.
Oh no, Oakland had
They had the reverse boycott.
Which I thought it was stupid until I actually saw what happened. And I was like, oh, it's kind of genius.
But they started the chants again in San Francisco when the A's were playing there.
You know, it's hard for the White Sox. One, because they share a city where they're sort of the little brother of the city. There's far more Cubs fans. And, you know, part of it is when people move to Chicago from other places, is the vast majority of the time those people root for the Cubs, wear by Cubs hats. And it's a lot cooler to go to a Cubs game. And the television ratings are dominated way more by the Cubs. And so it's gotta be already, you've got that, you know, chip on your shoulder. And you haven't had a lot of recent success. I mean, you had the one year you went to the playoffs, but you got your asses kicked by Oakland. But you're already entering. I mean, we're several days before the trade deadline, and you typically don't see a ton of movement this early. We're seeing a lot of movement early this year.
Mm-hmm.
But the White Sox have been the big seller already. And you're like, okay. And you hear that for the most part, almost everybody is available. And I think Cease is the only name I've heard not being available.
Him and Robert, I think, are the ones that they're kind of putting off limits right now. And I think we had that feeling even a week or so ago, like hell, even months ago when we were looking at the hypothetical sell scenarios, it seemed like the most likely candidates to be the untouchables would be Robert and Cease, which you get, right? Yeah, I mean, they're both in their prime. So
yeah, Cease and Lubob are probably the most likely to stay. But I mean, I'm hearing Tim Anderson's name being thrown around. I'm hearing Eloy Jimenez's name being thrown around. And, you know, you've already gotten rid of Lance Lynn, Joe Kelly, Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, Kendall Graveman. And so you are starting your third rebuild in a decade.
You're essentially rebuilding your rebuild.
Yeah. I mean, the last sell-off when you got rid of Chris Sale and that bunch, you did well in your sell-off. You got a lot of prospects and you're like, okay, we think this is going to go well. I mean, you thought with Eloy Jimenez and
Mankata and Kopech and Lopez and Giolito.
Mm-hmm. And Nicky Two Strikes. You're like, oh, hey, we like the direction this is going. And, you know, it's, we keep saying it is, there's a lot of skill that has to go into it, but there's also a lot of luck.
Sure. And you know what? A lot of it is malpractice. Some of it's bad luck. I mean, with Yoel Moncada, the back issues and the injuries over the years, that's bad luck. Eloy Jimenez with the injury issues. Maybe some of that's coaching, the way he runs through the bag, but some of the things he's also gone through, like needing an appendectomy, like that's not on him or anybody. Mm-hmm. That's rotten luck. And I think you can argue too that Luis Robert went through a bunch of unlucky moments his first few years, because he had a few notable injuries where he missed some time. That kind of stuff is bad luck. Now, developing, coaching, fundamentals, that's not bad luck. Not investing in supplementing your team when it is good, mm-hmm. that's all on the franchise. That's all on Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and everyone who's running the show there.
This team still has not given $100 million contract.
No, your biggest contract is Andrew Benintendi. And Andrew Benintendi, on the surface, as a player, he's been fine, but that's your biggest contract ever, is him.
Your biggest contract ever is, how many home runs does he have this season?
Two.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
And your other one was Yasmani Grandal.
Yeah, he's got your... Yeah, so your biggest contract in history, his first year, sure, he's batting 281, but he's got two home runs and 29 RBIs. And I know RBIs are not a good stat anymore, but it just kind of emphasizes that, you know, he's not helping the team win ball games. And I'm not shitting on him. He's been fine. And part of it is the team around him has been hot doo-doo sandwiches. But, you know, that's the biggest contract ever.
Right, right. And remember this too. Over the past few years, how many free agents we saw out there in off seasons where we said this would be a perfect fit for the White Sox? And they didn't get it, or they had a seat at the table. They were in on him, but they didn't get him. Go back to the Manny Machado thing in 2019. You remember that, right?
Yep.
And you looked like you had him, and then you didn't. But
I mean, Manny Machado is on pace to have a career high in home runs and career high in RBIs, and he's you know, he's playing well.
And I think, too, you look at that situation and we remember the disappointment on the south side from that. But then there was that feeling of, you know what? It's okay. We still have a lot of young talent. And then you look back now and you say, why couldn't we have made that deal again?
Yep. And honestly, like, so was, all right, was trading all these players that they've traded so far. And again, the for sale sign is up. You know, at this point, did it make sense to sell Lance Lynn, Joe Kelly? Absolutely. Did it make sense to sell Reynaldo Lopez and Kendall Graveman? Yes. What about Lucas Giolito? I'm on the fence about Lucas Giolito because it's, if you're the White Sox, you had the opportunity to sell players and retool. If you were an owner that was serious about winning, you could have shed dead weight, retooled, kind of like the Red Sox do. And I think Lucas Giolito staying and trying to re-sign him, is he an ace anymore? Probably not. But has he been a good pitcher this year? Yeah, he bounced back this year and has had a pretty good year. I don't know if I would have gotten rid of him. But the return you got, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Nothing blew me away.
I mean, they say the catcher they got back in return is one of the better catchers in prospect land, if you want to call it that. He's like the 60 something prospect. He's in the top 100, but I don't know. And you know what? We can look at other teams getting big time prospects and see like, wow, that's pretty good. This seemed like an overall okay return for Lucas Giolito, but do we really owe our confidence to Rick Hahn?
No. And at what point is he on the hot seat? And to even to his credit, is how much does he actually run things and how much has to go through Kenny Williams and Jerry Reinsdorf?
We don't know.
We have no idea.
We have no idea. This is the franchise whose owner sat down with his VP and GM and said, we're hiring Tony La Russa. That's it. We're hiring him.
Yep.
How can you know how much Reinsdorf or Kenny Williams? I've heard rumors and take them for what they are. They're rumors. But we've seen some posts online from possible sources within the White Sox organization where some of the big moves might have more Kenny Williams stamp than we think. But how do we know for sure?
I think so. I think Kenny Williams still puppeteers a lot of this. I think he stepped up in the position because he didn't like being accountable for things publicly. And Rick Hahn gets a bigger say in things now, but he also has to be the face of every bad thing that happens.
How often do we really hear from Kenny Williams? How often have we heard from Kenny Williams over the past decade? Not a lot.
I think that's the way he wants it.
Yes. And you know what? Kenny Williams brought Jerry Reinsdorf his World Series. He is basically Reinsdorf's son at this point. So Jerry will do whatever he wants, whatever he gets asked to from Kenny Williams.
I mean, what if you could get a promotion and do less work and not have any accountability? I mean, Rick Hahn has no accountability within the ownership group because they don't give a shit.
But he has to answer the questions and he's the one taking most of the heat.
Yeah, he's the one the fans are yelling for his head and that the the media is asking all the tough questions to, and he's got to answer those. And that sucks. And if you got a promotion into a forever job and you didn't have to deal with that, you could just go into your office and if things go bad, you know what? You and Jerry go out back and smoke a stogie.
And there is zero, absolutely zero evidence we've heard from anybody that there's going to be some major shakeup on the South side.
Oh yeah, there's none. The none chance.
And here's another question too. Does Pedro Grifol get another chance?
Yes. Because Jerry doesn't want to pay another manager.
Unless it's Tony La Russa again.
Tony's feeling better.
He's wheeled in as he's sleeping with a blanket over his legs.
Weekend at Bernie style.
He's just like murmuring to himself, like with his eyes closed.
Weekend at La Russa's.
I think someone actually made a Photoshop of that.
Oh my god! It's just whenever you puppeteer his arm up. He's not dead, but he's got a Michelob Ultra in his hand.
There's crudely attached strings to his wrists, and he's like snoring, but he's got the glasses on with the eyes painted on them.
He's got a string on his back, and when you pull it, he says something vaguely racist.
You pull it. I like to walk guys one and two. Hey, barkeep, you got any more? Whoop. Well, if it's sincere, then
you got the TWTW. Shit, wrong soundtrack.
Damn it, Kenny. I told you not to put that one in there.
But yeah, I mean, I feel bad for White Sox fans because they're just going through it now. And you got, and what's your consolation prize? You get Trace Thompson back.
And listen, you know what? Maybe some of these prospects that do come back end up being good. It's possible, but why should people right now believe that?
Oh yeah, I don't. That's why I'm just not excited about these prospects. It's nobody that I'm like, ooh. I mean, I think you got the top, like two of the top three Angels prospects, but don't they have a shitty farm system like the White Sox do?
Most of the time, yes.
You know, it's too bad you couldn't have, I mean, I guess they're buying, so they're not trading, Shohei Ohtani, but you know, if you could have sold to them after they sold Shohei Ohtani and gotten some of that bounty, but you know, it's your third rebuild in a decade. You've got ownership that just doesn't give a shit. What motivation do you have to bother to watch this team at this point for the rest of the year? If you were a White Sox fan, what motivation do you have to turn on your television and watch this or go to the ballpark?
At least the ballpark, you can go eat some really good food and have fun at the ballpark without paying attention to the game. Don't get me wrong. I think a lot of people are going to stay away from the ballpark, but at least there's that. But in terms of watching,
One thing I will give to the White Sox fans credit is when that team stinks, they let you know with that attendance.
Yeah. They are very vocal about it, and it's not always saying stuff.
I hope White Sox fans just make that place a ghost town, you know, where it's like Oakland, where you've got 2,000 people in that stadium to let Jerry know, hey, you know, win.
Does he care?
I don't think he does, especially when he sees this sports network money about to come in.
That's what I'm saying. He's got that sweet ass deal, right? With the ballpark.
He's got all kinds of sweet ass deals.
So why does he give a shit? If he gave a shit, he wouldn't keep the same people around over and over and over.
Yeah, he just doesn't.
If he gave a shit, he would say something.
He cares about making money for him and his business partners. That's all he cares about.
He's a businessman.
Yeah. This is a business to him. This is not, you know, owning a sports team used to be a passion. I mean, you look at the olden time owners, they wanted to win, or it was a business. Okay, sorry. There was some businesses that owned it. They just treated it like advertising and stuff. But
Charles Comiskey.
Yeah. But
Bill Wurtson. Arthur Wurtson. Anyway.
But you've just, you know, at this point with the value of these teams, I wish it would just be some rich lunatic that all he wanted to do was win. And he looked at this like, you know, in business, he's winning by making money. But with this owning this team, he's winning by actually winning and just threw money at it. And, you know, there's just not a lot of those. It's just now it's these ownership groups, because, you know, how many people can come up with billions of dollars to buy a team? It's these ownership groups and they want to recoup that money. And that's that.
You want Jim Irsay to be your owner? You hear about the stuff with Taylor? You hear about that?
Every step of the way, that just got worse and worse. When it was, oh, Jonathan Taylor is meeting privately with Jim Irsay. Oh, that's not good. And then he left the meeting going, I want to be traded. And I went, uh-oh. And then Jim Irsay publicly responds. And I was like, all right, I'm dead. I can't look at this anymore. This is a train wreck.
And now you're hearing that they're going to put him on the inactive list, so his contract becomes null and void.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I saw that. Let me pull it up exactly what it said. Let's see. Source ESPN. Colts running back Jonathan Taylor reported to training camp complaining of back pain that was deemed to be from pre-existing issue. The team is now considering placing him on non-football injury list, which could result in his not being paid for the regular season. The team is still working through things, but a decision could come within a week, according to source. Taylor is currently on the PUP list, which does not affect a player's salary. So there's some things going on there.
Man.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
I have thoughts. Let's hold those for until we get to football. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked to White Sox here, Cubs, you know, going into today, they'd won 8 in a row, playing really well. You know, but they lost, ended up losing today in a shitty game where Hendricks didn't look his best, and Cubs bats.
They didn't score. Bats were cold. Yeah.
I mean, he pitched well enough to win, just they just couldn't do shit.
Right.
You know, they made Mats look like Nolan Ryan out there. But I'm not getting on the hype train about the Cubs. I'm enjoying the wins, and you know, they're within striking distance of first place and the wild card. And I don't know where they exactly stand. I didn't look after the loss today, but as of last night, they were 3.5 out of first and 3 games out of the wild card, only having to leapfrog 3 teams. So a lot closer than the White Sox. But I look at this and, you know, since that bad loss against St. Louis, they won 3 in a row against St. Louis. They won 2 against the White Sox and then 3 more against St. Louis. They beat 2 bad teams for a lot of games. You know, your stretch is kind of ending here because you got 4 against the Reds. And that's a team that
that scares me.
You know, they could
kick your ass.
Yeah, they could boat race you if you don't come ready to play. Then you got three against Atlanta, who's arguably the best team in baseball.
Best team, yep, yep.
Three against the Mets, who are not good, but they've got a lot of good. We'll see how many by the time the Cubs play them, but they've got a lot of good players. They could easily turn it on and kick your ass. And then three against Toronto, who's a good team. You've got some tough series coming up here. And I don't want, you know, these wins against shitty teams to change too much how they'd plan to go. You know, I'm glad that Cody Bellinger was taken off of the trade block. I think
me that's too. I the think
right you, move.
Even if you weren't as close, I feel like trading away Cody Bellinger with what's going on, I feel like as tempting as it is to try to get something for him, I almost feel like that sends a bad message.
I think it sends a real bad message. I would still attempt to trade Stroman. Partly for a multitude of reasons. You know, it's one thing if he was pitching like he was
prior to London.
If he was still pitching like that and there was talk, I mean, there was good talks between his people and the Cubs about an extension, and they felt that they were on a good path. You know, I'd say no. But the fact that he's kind of, I'm not going to say the nuclear option, but somewhere on that path, option of dealing with his frustration of not getting a contract extension or talks and just going to the straight to the media and creating an us versus them kind of mentality and backing it up with terrible pitching. I mean, since London, his ERA is over 8.
It's bad. And I do wonder if that blister is bothering him, because even that start against the White Sox, you saw what the White Sox were able to do against the breaking ball, the slider that didn't break. So you wonder if that blister is bothering him. He's not getting bite on it. But yeah, since that London game, it has not been good. And, you know, maybe you call it some blister issue. Maybe you call it a little bit of BABIP regression, because let's be real, he doesn't rely on missing bats like a lot of modern top rotation guys do. Relies on contact.
So, I mean, I would probably consider trading him. I don't know what you're going to get for him. I think a team would have to be either really think that it's a quick fixable issue like a blister. I mean, not quick, but a fixable issue. Cause really you're looking for a guy that's going to be help you in September. Or a team that's desperate. I don't know which team is going to give you a lot for Stroman. And I don't honestly know if you expect a lot, because if you get anything, it's better than what you were going to get if you let him play the rest of the season for your team and then walked.
You know, I feel like, and I've said this before, that there might be ways to go for it while making a trade that involves one of your guys, aka Stroman. I mean, think about those good old fashioned trades, players for players. Remember when that was kind of more of a thing?
You know, I heard a proposal like that between like the Cubs and the Mariners, where you're giving guys that will help the Mariners right now in exchange for guys that will help you in next year or the year after.
Or even now and beyond. I don't know.
I mean, Orioles might be another option. They still have players in their farm system, and you know, they're a very good team, and they could use a little help now. I mean, you know, they're in first place, but that's a dogfight of a division. And, you know, by the time that this long season ends, they very well could be in last place. It's that tight. Maybe going back to Toronto. That's another sure. team that.
And this is all hypothetical and very like broad-minded thinking where, you know, we have ideas here, how much it would work out. I don't know, but you feel like you got to do your due diligence on some of this stuff. I mean, here's the thing. From what we're hearing, it sounds like they want to add at this point. Okay.
I mean, you know what is where do they want to add? I'm sure it's bullpen.
Bat and bullpen. Yes.
You know,
they've expressed interest in Bednar and Jamer Candelario.
I think there's a possibility to add, like you said, players without waving the white flag. And I think that's probably the way to do it is you're telling your team, hey, we're not quitting on you. We're making moves to hopefully make us more competitive.
There is such a thing as the three-team trade too.
Yeah. And you know, you could say, hey, we're going to trade Stroman because he can bring us pieces, but we feel that, you know, somebody can step up. One of the young players can step up and take his spot in the rotation. But we, you know, we need a third base bat and right. we need bullpen.
Right. I guess here's the fact of the matter. You've gotten yourself back into a race, but you can't keep going the way you are built right now because the type of winning is not going to be sustainable. Because listen, your offense has scored a shit ton of runs over this win streak, but there's some holes and a lot of these guys are very hot and cold. And you need another stable bat or two to kind of feel better about being more consistent over the rest of the stretch of the season. Also, you need at least one more bullpen arm out there. You need one.
Yeah.
That's not we'd like one. You need one. Ebert Alzolay has been nasty as a closer, but you look around it, you know, okay. Julian Merriweather has overall had a nice year, but we've seen some real hitches in the road. Kind of the same thing with Leiter. Started out dominant, is still doing pretty good, but he's kind of prone to some of those ugly innings, even if he or somebody else gets out of it.
Rowan Wick is gone.
You know, I do like that Danny Palencia kid. I do like him. It's a small sample size what you have, but he could be something. You need a lefty, a reliable lefty. You do not have one of those.
Yeah, so if I'm the Cubs, I'm not having a fire sale. I'm just going to trade. I mean, who would I be willing to trade? Stroman, definitely. Trying to think who else I would even consider trading at this point. That's worth trading.
I mean, you don't want to trade Bellinger.
Mm-mm. I mean,
and the rest of you guys are kind of your core guys who have value.
And
you know, half's part of your core,
maybe Leiter, but if you're trying to win, you know,
you need bullpen arms.
You need bullpen arms, even if he hasn't been as good. You still need that arm. I mean, it might just be Stroman.
If you trade Stroman, this is just hypothetical.
They might keep him.
Yeah. There's a lot of excitement among the fan base, and this winning streak has been fun, a lot of fun. But there is a possibility that at this time next week, we could be reevaluating things again, or things could continue to be great. I just don't know. That's what's kind of, it's both frustrating and kind of exciting. You know what? The fact that we're talking about being relevant, it feels good. It feels great.
I kind of wish they would have had these next couple series first.
Oh, me too.
Because if you had gone through Cincinnati and Atlanta and the Mets, and you were on, you know, 1-8 of 9, then I'd have been like, oh, going into St. Louis and the White Sox, yeah, I'm feeling real good. But the other way around, St. Louis is a dumpster fire.
Yeah,
I
they're
know
bad.
As Cubs fans, we still look at them as dangerous poison snakes that can strike at any moment. They're a dumpster fire team. If it wasn't for the Rockies, they would be, I think, the worst record in
the NL.
NL, I believe so.
Yes. You had one of your pitchers throw at Ian Happ twice because he accidentally hit Wilson Contreras on a backswing.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about that. I meant to.
And then you had old Chip Carey.
So, number one, what kind of dum-dum thinks that, number one, Ian Happ could do that intentionally and would do that intentionally against his friend?
I'm going to swing so hard to the back that I'm going to injure a Cardinal.
When a catcher gets hit like that, he's too close. He's crowding the plate. And you had Ian Happ worried about him and gave him a big hug.
Yeah, shit just happens.
You know, if Ian Happ could make that not happen, he would have.
He would. He would have.
There's a 0% chance that that was any sort of intent to it.
That shit happens all the time.
And then
you're going to throw at him for that?
Well, one, you throw high and you miss, and then you come back and you
and it could him. Not have been more obvious.
Oh, yeah. And he got thrown out and now he's suspended.
Yeah. So point whole being, it's a dumpster fire there. I've never seen the Cardinals be anywhere near this terrible in my life.
Sorry, Washington is...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about them. Yeah.
So, yeah, it is Washington, St. Louis, and Colorado that are just dumpster fire.
Yeah.
But, so, you throw, and you hit Happ. You get kicked out of the game. You put an already taxed bad bullpen into another predicament.
And you get your butts kicked.
What did you prove? I mean,
nothing.
Happ saw it coming. And to his credit, he didn't react. He just took it. But Chip Carey is the leader of the idiot posse. I mean, the fact that he defended that, and it's just inconceivable. It's seriously, somebody should check on his mental wherewithal.
It's like that old style hee-haw way invaded his mind.
He turned into Hawk Harrelson. I'm surprised he didn't run down to the field and check on him.
Yeah, and it's like, really, dude,
I mean, didn't Hawk do that once when somebody got hurt? He ran down.
Running down Todd Frazier. Yeah, yeah. He cut his lip. Oh, Stoney, you take over. I'm going to go down and check on him. Well, I just saw him. And?
Hawk Harrelson was the worst, man. Yeah, so that is just dumpster fire team. If you're the Cubs, let's see, when is Tuesday the trade deadline?
Yes.
You know, you're not going to know where you stand before the trade deadline. You're just not. Because you're going to need that Cincy, Atlanta, Mets, Toronto.
You're making your decision now. Yeah. You're making the decision now. And I think the decision is, we're going to try to add a few pieces.
I mean, at this point, Stroman has been a liability. And Smiley, you're kind of propping him up.
It was a little encouraging to see what he did in his last appearance.
You called it
in St. Louis. Yes.
They put a starter in to, start that ball game and then brought him in.
Right. For the second time in a row. The first time they did it, he was not very good. The second time, Smiley actually did legit look good. Now, here's the other question, too, with the rotation. You brought Wesneski back. He was the opener for Drew Smiley. And if he can find himself what he did last year in a brief time, and he's part of your rotation, and if Jameson Taillon, who pitched another good game, if Taillon is fixed, quote-unquote, and Wesneski is finding himself, then maybe you do feel a bit better going forward.
This is a huge opportunity for Wesneski.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be spots in that rotation that open up. And
yeah, Drew Smiley's not going to be here forever.
Hendricks not going to be here forever. I mean, there's a possibility that Hendricks is gone. Stroman is gone. And maybe Smiley's gone. So you're looking at Taillon and Steele in your rotation. You're filling three rotation spots. Wesneski has the opportunity, even in, let's say, they keep two of those three. If Wesneski comes in and pitches well, he is leading the pack of the young pitchers that are coming up, and because he will have proven something.
Right.
It's his opportunity to lose.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I'm rooting for him. It would be huge for the Cubs if Wesneski turns into something.
Feels even, pretty important.
Yeah, I mean, even if his long-term is a low two or a high three.
Fine. I'll gladly take middle of the rotation if he's good.
Right? You consider that trade a win if he's that.
And you saw him pitch on Friday. Like, the stuff looks good. He just got to command it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was throwing mid-upper 90s and the slider had that bite on it. You just got to control it and then you can be really effective.
But I'm rooting for him, man. I really am.
I'm rooting for this whole team. They got back into relevance and I pray they stay in it. I don't know if they will, but I'm hoping they do. And even if they don't make the postseason this year, if they at least stick with it until the end or near the end, and you say, okay, you know what? We gave it a hell of a run. We had a good go at this season. We saw a lot of growth. We feel like we're going to continue to grow next year. Fine. That's perfectly fine. It would have felt demoralizing to go through yet another sell-off if we were, you know, well below 500 again. That would have been completely demoralizing. And hopefully this recent stretch is a sign of better things. there's also the nerves too that they could face Atlanta and the Reds and get their asses kicked. I think if they can just survive, you know, if you go, if over the next, what? So it's four against the Reds and three against Atlanta, right? So that's seven games. If you win four of those games, I think you're feeling pretty damn good.
I think so. If you split with Cincy, I mean, I think your preferred would be win three or four against Cincy and one against Atlanta, but any combination of four wins, I think you're happy.
Even just with the Red series, if you split that, I won't feel too down about that.
I mean, Cincinnati is in first place right now. If you were to sweep them, you know, you're probably not in first. Milwaukee's probably going to be, but man, you've leapfrogged them and you're right on Milwaukee's ass because Milwaukee's not playing well right now.
It's been very up and down all around this division. And I'm trying to be as positive as I can about this whole thing, but there are times when I can't lie that it's frustrating thinking about those games that got away because everybody knew that those early games that got away, we'd be talking about down the road.
Mm-hmm.
We could be in first place right now if we didn't waste so much time with Eric Hosmer DHing and just, you know, with the struggles of some of the guys you brought in with the bullpen, whether it was Fulmer or Boxberger in big spots where they didn't pitch like we'd hoped. It's just frustrating thinking about those games you pissed away. Even if you had three more wins right now.
Yep. I mean, three more wins has you right in striking distance of the Reds in first place and possibly in a wild card.
And, you know, you can go back and look. It's like if you didn't blow that London game and you didn't blow the 6-0 lead to the Brewers and you didn't blow that 6-1 lead late against the Astros, if you didn't lose that game on the walk-off to the Dodgers, if you had those four games flipped around, we're feeling even better right now.
And honestly, I know some of it you got to be like, oh, the players didn't play well at points and, you know, Hosmer came, but you got to put some of it on Jed. Is we came into spring training going, who the fuck is this bullpen? I mean, we looked at this bullpen like the Cleveland fans looked at this team at the beginning of Major League. That bullpen did not look good. Or hopefully they just pull out that magic. I think we were all hopeful on Mancini, but I think everybody and their mother knew that Hosmer was a disaster. And he was a glorified placeholder.
Yeah, and I mean, I know it was veteran minimum placeholder, but you were batting him fifth as a DH. That lost you games. And sorry, it really frustrates me. I know we should be more positive right now with the way this team... We have won some excellent games. How about that Mike Talkman catch?
That was amazing.
I lost my voice.
Did you see the billboard?
The billboard, no.
Oh. Who's the t-shirt company that just puts the words on there?
Oh, Obvious Shirts.
Obvious Shirts put up a billboard in St. Louis, which is a picture of that catch.
Oh, that's awesome. That is so, I mean, that was one of those, somebody pointed it out. It might've been Michael Cerami, my buddy from Bleacher Nation. I don't remember if it was him or if it was somebody else. So pardon me if I don't get the credit here right, but pointing out how that was probably the most exciting regular season moment we've had since the David Bodie Grand Slam. to conclude a Cubs game. And I think he's right.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was awesome.
I mean, I was jumping up and down yelling. I think I woke up the neighbors.
But, you know, quickly going back to my point is, you know, Jed's got to take some of this blame because he put, oh, well, Hosmer's, you know, he didn't say it's a placeholder, but we all knew how Hosmer was a placeholder and that Matt Mervis was going to be the guy, and never considering what if neither one of them perform well, then what? I mean, we knew one was going to suck, but we were hopeful on the other one, but we had no contingency plan on if he didn't play well either.
Now's his time for redemption. What kind of moves can he make here before the deadline? Can we surprise the world and make a run? Show us.
They have to. And I
show us.
I don't want to give up the farm to try to get more wins here. Is these guys have got to be low risk, high reward type moves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to be smart about it. You got to identify. And the only way you're spending valuable farm capital is if you're getting long-term solutions, controllable assets that are going to make your team better for this season and beyond this season. You can't pile up valuable farm assets for rentals, not this year, but you can make your team better now by getting, like you said, low cost, high reward, or controllable assets.
I mean, you know, PCA off limits, Alcantara, Ben Brown, Wesneski, Hernandez, Javier Saad, Caleb Killian, Jordan Wicks, Daniel Palencia, Matt Mervis, Miguel Amaya. I mean, no, all those got to be untouchable, right? Who would you
move? I don't know about all of them. I think Hernandez you can move. I think Killian you should absolutely sell high on if you have the chance. Owen Casey, if you get something very valuable in return, I think you pull a trigger.
Still on Miles Mastroboni.
Yeah. I mean, really, if there's one prospect that is truly untouchable, unless you're including it in Shohei Ohtani, it's PCA. I'd be more than fine selling high on Caleb Killian or Brennan Davis.
All right, I'm gonna name a name. You tell me.
Okay.
Alexander Canario.
If it's a controllable asset, wins you more in the future, sure.
I mean, Brennan Davis obviously is on the block.
Yeah,
he's got to be available. Which is something that 2 years ago we were probably laughing about saying if we said that.
Right, right. And, you know, and here's the thing. It's the biggest challenge is finding that balance between don't just spend freely, but don't prospect hug either. There's a balance, and that's hard to find sometimes. Right?
Yeah. What about Cade Horton?
Depends. I think he's still a ways away, so.
Yeah. I just, there's a lot of good nuggets and hopefuls in that farm system. I'm very cautious because there's not like this ton of can't miss guys like in 2014, 2015.
You don't have a farm with Bryant and Schwarber and Baez and Soler. You don't have that.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys where I've, you know, if the cards play out right, you could have a lot of good players in here.
Sure.
But you could also see this spin out of control and you know, very few of them pan out.
I mean, look at the prospects a few years ago. We were talking about Brennan Davis and Braylon Marquez.
Davis was on the path to being until that injury. And
well,
then
so was Braylon Marquez. You never know. You never know.
And, you know, it's right now you feel like there's one can't miss guy, and he's still 2 years away.
Who, PCA?
You think he's up next year?
Yeah, I think so.
At the start of the season?
I don't know, but he's going to be in AAA soon. I think he's closer than you think.
Maybe. So I wouldn't want to get rid of Miguel Amaya. I think there's something to him. I don't know if he's going to be a special player, but
you're seeing some promise.
I'm seeing a major league baseball player.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everybody's going to be a superstar, but you need some good young players to play around superstars.
Right.
So we'll see how this plays out come next week. Cause next week we're either going to be, you know, cheering mightily, or we're going to be singing sorrows. Can't believe they gave that guy up for this guy and get smoked by Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I want to be positive. I've really enjoyed this stretch. I really do. Watching Cody Bellinger mash has been fun. Watching the defense just make plays left and right has been awesome. Your middle infield of Dansby Swanson and Nico Hoerner defensively, even what Mike Tauchman is doing. And it's really been a lot of fun watching this team.
I don't want to put too much in it, but Nick Madrigal has not played a bad defensive third base.
No, he's been quite good. He's been pretty dang good. I got to give him credit.
It'd be nice if he could hit a home run or two.
It's not going to happen.
Nick Madrigal, home run hitter.
Hey, he hit one.
As many as Tim Anderson.
Yeah, hey, we need to mention that. Tim Anderson finally homered.
Yeah.
The monkey's off his back. That was on his back for over a year.
And when he hit that, we all knew it was gone.
Yeah.
But other than that, man, he's not been a good player.
No, though he has been hitting better recently.
He gone.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Let's wrap this up with a little Bears talk here.
Training camp
is here. And for the first time in I can't remember how long, we're not, well, you know, the defense always is ahead of the offense at this point. The offense is all over the defense, and Justin Fields, DJ Moore looks lethal.
Yeah. It's like every day you're reading, oh, another deep completion from Justin Fields to DJ Moore. It's nice to hear.
And it's not blown coverages.
No,
it's great routes and great throws and great catches. I mean, there's that one, that first highlight, Tyreek Stevenson was all over DJ Moore and just a beautiful pass. Like it is a good connection. I love it.
I do too. It looks natural.
You know, you're seeing Velus Jones look good. You're seeing Mooney in there looking good. You're seeing
Scott. That guy can burn.
You know, I want to get to that too, but he has been like, he's been really good. And DJ Moore, obviously good. And Justin Fields has been looking fantastic with good. I mean, clearly he worked with receivers in the offseason. The timing looks good. And you had the first extension given out, significant extension given out by Ryan Poles. Cole Kmet got a 4-year, $50 million contract. And that's good because it locks him up. He's really become an important player on this offense. And not just on this offense, but as far as this coaching staff, what they want to instill as a work ethic and player. But it sent good vibes through this locker room saying, hey, they're starting to reward guys.
And you saw the chemistry that Justin Fields and Cole Kmet had last year and the production that Cole Kmet just completely boosted in last year. And, you know, remember, Cole Kmet was drafted by Ryan Pace, mm-hmm. not by Ryan Poles. Yep. So the fact that one of the guys that he did not draft showed him so many good things, I think that says a lot. It says a lot about his production last year and the rapport he's built with Justin Fields to be his number one tight end.
Yeah, absolutely. And people are like, oh, you're paying him compared to these other receivers. These other tight ends, he's not as good as. All those other tight ends are strictly receiving tight ends. Is Cole Kmet is a blocking and receiving tight end. He's a different position. You don't see anybody like him very often. And he's an important role for the Bears and what they're trying to do. And, you know, so you've paid him, and I didn't do the math, but our friend Brad Spielberger did the math and said that after the extension, the Bears have about $15 million left to hit the cap floor for the season. So the Bears still have money to spend. And the three options you have right now, the most obvious options, I think, are one, you sign an extension to Jalen Johnson. Two, you sign an extension to Darnell Mooney. Or three, you bring in a veteran pass rusher.
And there's been a bit more smoke on that end. Not much, but some.
Right. And when you listen to Poles talk, it sounds like those conversations are going on with mm-hmm. veteran pass rushers. But he said that, what does it take, two to dance, I think he said.
Right, yep.
Meaning that, you know, just because the Bears are making an offer doesn't necessarily mean that those guys are willing to bite, because the guys that they're going for, I'm sure, would prefer, given similar contracts, I'm sure they would prefer to go to a team that they think is going to be more likely to win. You know, Jadeveon Clowney. My thoughts, you know, certain of the guys that are older probably are like, hey, I just want to go to a team that I think could win a Super Bowl. And Ngakoue, I think, wants a multi-year contract. And I mm-hmm. don't think the Bears are willing to give him a multi-year
contract. And that's where I think the holdup is with that. Yeah.
So it's, there's hiccups either way. And I think the longer this goes, the better in the favor it goes to the Bears, because, you know, eventually if those guys are like, if we want to play, we either got to wait for an injury midseason and then try to come in, or we take a Bears 1-year offer.
Yeah. I, that's why this hasn't gone down yet, potentially, with him. And we'll see what happens on that front.
Yeah, I mean, I think one will come in. I think the Bears will eventually get one. They have the cap, the space. It's just getting that deal done. And I mean, Robert Quinn is still out there, and I'm sure that's a little bit of bitterness of getting traded.
I don't think that's an option.
I don't think so either. He's old in that group. Yannick Ngakoue, I think he's said multiple times that, number one, he wants to go to one of the contenders and he wants a multi-year deal, but he's starting to open up more on the teams rather than the contract. Mm-hmm. Jadeveon Clowney, I'm sure there's a little bit of how it ended in Cleveland and him wanting to go to a winner. You've got Justin Houston. He, I'm sure, is trying to go to a winner because he's 34. And I even think Jason Pierre-Paul's out there, but I don't know what he's looking like these days.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I think the Bears will get something done. It might not be until close to the season starts, but I think they'll get something done.
I hope so.
I'm less likely to see an extension this early with Mooney or Jalen Johnson. And I think Darnell Mooney, both of them, I think they kind of want to wait and see what they're going to get this year.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go right in and pull the trigger on that necessarily. I think that this is going to be a big year for both of them.
I mean, Jalen Johnson, when he's healthy, has been very good.
Very good, but he's not always healthy.
He's not always healthy. And Mooney was ascending. We thought he was going to be really good, and then he got injured, and we don't know what he's. I mean, he's just coming back from that injury. We don't know what he's going to look like.
Right.
And so, and plus, we draft Scott, who is a very similar player to Darnell Mooney. They might earmark that money for whoever is better. But I mean, they're not going to pay Mooney and Claypool.
Right.
I think if you tell me they are signing one and not the other, I'm at this point, my money's probably on re-signing Claypool, but both players have to prove something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they get extensions, they'll be in-season extensions.
Yeah. I would agree.
What else? Darnell Wright came in with exceptional, conditioning results. Came in 16 pounds lighter, and his conditioning tests were through the roof. Did you read about this?
I did.
He was doing the wrong conditioning program.
The wide receiver conditioning.
So he came in, and I was hearing a former player talk about this, and he said a lot of them are the same. Because I saw some fans that were just down on him, like, well, he's so stupid. He did the wrong... And from what I'm hearing, they're very similar tests that they have to do. It's just how much time you get to rest in between things and the time you're expected to get from the workout, how fast you do it. And wide receivers have to do it faster than offensive linemen. And wide receivers get less of a break between sets. But it's the same thing. So he worked out with the numbers going, hey, I've got to do this with, this little rest and this fast. And so when he came in, he was smoking every other offensive lineman.
So it could have been a good thing.
Yeah.
He's in the best shape of his life. The old cliche, right?
Yeah. I mean, we already knew he was athletic for that size, and, you know, he drops some of that weight, and that's, I mean, the Bears want an offensive lineman who can move, and he can move.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him. But the last thing I had for the, it's not quite Bears related, little bit, is all of the talk about the running back market.
Yes, that's a big topic of conversation.
It's
not
a big,
just because of the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, it relates to the Bears because it's the reason that David Montgomery is no longer here.
Correct.
And, you know, I have a few points on it, and I just wasn't articulating it the way I wanted to. And the general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers came out and basically said what I felt in a much better way. He said, you know, with the astronomical rise in quarterback salaries and the constraints of having a hard salary cap, every team has to have a threshold and an evaluation for valuing the other positions and how they'll fit into the salary cap with the rising quarterback costs.
Mm-hmm.
And so many teams are viewing the running back position as the one that they feel they can do with by just inserting somebody on a rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so when fans are like, oh, the collective bargaining agreement needs to be changed, or the league needs to step in, they're not going to do anything. They're not going to change those rules, because in order to help running backs, they're going to have to hurt quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's good luck
the
with
fact.
That.
And I mean, honestly, I think the most helpful thing they can do would be, and I think there's going to be teams that bitch and moan about this, is don't have quarterbacks count towards the salary cap. Lower the cap number, but make quarterbacks not count. And I think that, you know, there's cons to that, but I think that's how you get other people to be paid. Because as long as quarterbacks, especially if you're a team that has a young quarterback and you're like, man, I got to pay that guy, you're not going to sign a running back to a $15 million a year. That's going to be earmarked for your quarterback. The Bears are not going to pay any running backs, because Justin Fields is going to be due a contract. He'll be eligible for one after the season. And if Justin Fields puts in the season that we think he's going to have, the Bears are going to be really smart to try to lock him up now when he's first eligible, because as he gets better, he's going to get more expensive. And you don't want a Danny Dimes situation.
No, you don't.
Where you're like, I don't know how I feel about him, but I got to pay him $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just the way the league is working. And you can definitely pick out who are the better running backs. And, but there is a, you go, all right, how valuable is a top tier running back versus a second tier running back that's on a rookie contract?
Well, especially if you have a scheme that works and a good offensive line, because if you have a scheme that works and runners that can run block for you, then you can plug in pretty much any running back and make it work. Now, of course, like you said, there are running backs that are clearly better than others and have different skill sets. There are power backs that rely on strength to push forward. There are speedy running backs that use speed and agility. There are guys like Dave Montgomery that might not necessarily be quick or, say, like one of the strongest running backs, but has that kind of
hard to bring down.
So he bounces off guys. So there's definitely different types of running backs out there. The thing is you can make an offense work with all different types of running backs if the offensive scheme and the line that's blocking it is effective.
I am still going to go on record saying that I wish the Bears would have traded for Derrick Henry. No knock on the running backs they have is they had the cap space. And if this offensive line is going to improve like we hope and think they are, is, and you've got Derrick Henry, who, if you don't stack that box, he's gonna run for 5, 6, 7 yards every carry. If you don't stack that box, and it makes Justin Fields' job throwing easier. And if you stack that box and Justin Fields gets to that next level, he's not running against with a safety coming down on him. He's just got those cornerbacks to beat.
And he is one of those running backs that is clearly above all others. Those are the ones you say, you know what? Those are worth paying because their skill set alone brings them up a level, regardless of your scheme or not.
Yeah, and you're paying him a lot of money if you trade for him, but it's not so much money where you're like, I mean, it would be, this is the last year of his deal, and his base salary is 10.5. So it's a lot of money, but it is not so much where you are. I mean, the Bears have like $35 million in cap space and they're 15 under the cap floor. They've got a lot of money they could spend. And, you know, you could have given the Titans that cap relief and gotten him for next to nothing. And watching him play this 1 year, just to improve Justin Fields, where you're like, you don't got to worry about it. You've got this big man here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's like, you don't want to devalue the running back spot because running the ball is still insanely important in the game of football. There is no doubt that people are devaluing what the value is of keeping the ball on the ground. Nobody is. It's how much do you pay a running back when you are able to find ways to be effective in that game by other means of just paying a top tier running back. Like, quarterbacks are the most important position in sports. Yep. And that's something that you work with. You can have a scheme and have an okay quarterback, you know, and make it work fine. But I mean, look at this passer game in the NFL. I mean, who are the teams that usually win it? The star quarterbacks.
Until a running back comes in and wins league MVP and takes his team to a Super Bowl, they're not gonna get that big money anymore. It's not gonna happen.
Right. And you know, we talk about too the effectiveness of running backs and you know the value of running backs and how schemes can work and all that. The other factor too in all this, it's beyond just a running back's value. It's the nature of the position. Quarterbacks can play a long time. What's the average retirement age of a running back? I mean, if you're over 30 and you're still a running back in the NFL, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the average running back lifespan is 4 years.
It's not a long time.
I mean, I think the average NFL career is like 3 years.
So think about it. Like, a running back gets just brutally murdered every game.
All right,
and you only have so much you can take of that.
The average career span of an NFL running back is 2.57 years.
That's crazy.
The average career based on just being an NFL player, no position, is 3.3 years. The only two positions that have over four are quarterback and kicker/punter.
There you go.
Running back is the lowest.
And nobody should be surprised by that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the lowest career span. You're paying a guy. So after that rookie deal, it's everything you have is beyond the average length of their career.
Yep.
You know, and sure, there's guys that do play longer. But you look at what's his name from the Dallas Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott.
Zeke, yeah.
They paid him a lot of money. And at the end, man, that was an albatross contract that really hurt that franchise, and he hit a wall.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel for the running backs. I mean, but
we're not against them. It's just the unfortunate nature of the game.
Yeah. I it is nothing personal. It is just that's the way the game is going, and that's how things are viewed. And if they want to change it, then they've got to figure out a way to lengthen their careers or provide a value beyond that rookie contract and make themselves so much better than players on a rookie contract that you force your hand.
Right. Yep.
You know, Saquon Barkley is very upset, but you know what? He's going to get $10.9 million this year. And there's a lot of guys that would love to have $10.9 million this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm one of them.
You know, that you mentioned it, you could throw me in that circle too.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you would love to be paid $10.9 million this year.
Oh, it'd be great.
I could just retire at the end of the year.
Ah, it sounds wonderful.
Oh, well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I've said my piece. At this time next week, we'll have a better idea of what this Cubs team is going to be. We're going to have more Bear stuff. I'm going to be at that Family Fest this coming Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that. And then, yeah, closer to hockey we get.
All right. Sounds good. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or Shy Fan Pat 2 for Alex on X. And Alec, so dumb. Alexander J. PatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing.